This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Welcome, everyone, to this podcast on big data. Indeed, the EU Big Data Task Force, sponsored by the European Medicines Agency and the heads of medicines agencies, operated from 2017 until late 2019 to report on the challenges and opportunities of big data in medicines regulation. In January last year, that is a year ago, the task force recommended 10 priority initiatives, and the Big Data Steering Group then adopted a work plan to implement these recommendations. I am Thomas Kuhler, Head of Regulatory Science and Policy for the EU and Africa, Middle East and Eurasia at Sanofi in Paris, France. For the past several years, I've also served as Regional Editor for Europe for the DIA Global Forum. Today, I have the honor of being joined by Dr. Nicolai Bruhn, who has led and played a vital role in many of the most critical big data initiatives in Europe. Dr. Bruhn earned his medical and doctoral degrees from the University of Copenhagen, and he was selected as the first director of the Danish Medicines Agency's Medical Evaluation and Biostats Division upon its launch in March 2017. Thank you for joining us today, Nicolai, and welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
The work plan is obviously an important strategic document, and we are grateful that you have taken the time to engage in a discussion on this contemporary topic. But let's maybe begin by introducing the various capacities and organizations through which you are contributing to the big data initiatives in Europe. May we ask you to please explain your roles in the Big Data Task Force, the Big Data Steering Group, the European Medicines Agency, the Heads of Medicines Agency, and the Danish Medicines Agency. Maybe for the benefit of those who are not very familiar with the EU regulatory network, maybe you could explain how these different groups and bodies are interrelated and what are their different respective roles.
Well, first of all, I am employed as a director of division at one of the 27 national medicines agencies in Europe. And we work together under the umbrella of the Heads of Medicines Agencies, or HMA, umbrella. So this is where the heads of the 27 national medicines agencies meet and exchange experiences on a national level and also see where we can interact and work together as national agencies. That is in contrast, but not excluding the important work that goes on through the European Medicines Agency, which is the European Commission's Medicines Agency for Europe. And you might know that the European Medicines Agency is the agency that approves a lot, or I should say the majority of the new drugs that are being launched onto the European market. But they do it working very closely together with the national medicines agencies, who are indeed providing the assessors for the work that needs to be done to approving new medicines. Now, in 2017, the EMA and the HMA together found that this new avalanche of new data sources and data in large and vast quantities that are coming to us in the form of big data needed to have some structure in the way that it could be interrogated for the benefit of the regulatory network and ultimately for the patients. So as a joint task force, the Big Data Task Force was established by the HMA and the EMA together in 2017. The Big Data Task Force then worked for 3 years on a set of recommendations that were published in 2020 and that you can access on the hma.eu webpage or the EMA webpage, alternately as you wish. And these recommendations really were the joint recommendations of the Big Data Task Force for how to move forward in Europe in the big data area. Now, that having been completed, the HMA and EMA then changed the mandate of the task force and said, now we have the recommendations, then we focus on implementation of these recommendations. And for that, we put the Big Data Steering Group in place. So the Big Data Steering Group is not tasked with coming up with more recommendations, but rather to see that the recommendations done at the task force stage are now being implemented. And I'm one of the two co-chairs, together with my co-chair, Peter Arlett from the EMA. I'm the co-chair representing HMA in the Big Data Task Force and later on in the Big Data Steering Group. So a long answer to a short question. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Nikolai, for that. And, you know, even for me, who am based in the EU and should know all this, it's very helpful to get this explained, how all this is interrelated, and especially also the change from the task force into the steering group and that mandate, which I was actually not quite aware of. But let's talk a little bit then about these different recommendations. So one of the top recommendations is on the data analytics and real-world interrogation network. This is also known as the Darwin EU. This is the first, the top, and maybe the most ambitious of the 10 different recommendations. And also on top of that, it's also the recommendation with the most urgent timelines. So could you describe Darwin EU a little bit more in detail, and why it is among the top priorities, on what values you believe it will bring to the regulatory network?
I certainly can. First of all, the Big Data Task Force came with, I think, 47 different recommendations. There's a lot of focus on the top 10, which we publish on the front page of the report and also in the various other fora. But there are actually a total of 47 recommendations, which are well worth a read. And I can only recommend that people go to the webpage and read the full report. But among the top 10 recommendations, the first one we mentioned is the establishment of a data analytics real-world interrogation network, also called Darwin EU, which we see as a natural evolution of what regulators have been doing for decades now, which is interrogate and look at the randomized control clinical trials that the companies or the innovators have submitted to us with the purpose of having their innovation or new therapies approved by the regulators. Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the RCTs because they are, in my view, never going to go away. They are by far the best way to eliminate bias and establish the efficacy and safety of a single new therapeutic intervention. But we also know that the world is more complex than what the RCTs take into account. And therefore, we know that the RCTs are very good at describing the single intervention efficacy and safety. But when it comes to describing the real-world effectiveness and safety after launch in the patients who don't live up to all the in and exclusion criteria for participation in the trial, the patients who may suffer from more than one disease, the patients who may take more than one type of medicine, the patients who sometimes forget to take that medicine, and the patients who might be slightly overweight, who smoke, who drink, who are basically real-world citizens of Europe. These are the patients who need to benefit from the medicines. And for that, we thought that is very important now that the technological ability has come, that we can interrogate data beyond the RCTs, that we can interrogate real-world data after the launch of new therapeutics. We can interrogate electronic health records, registries, and a host of other different data sources and complement the RCTs. And for this purpose, we need the Darwin EU network. And I stress the word network because it's not a big database. We're not going to build a mountain and a pile of data. We are going to build a network of federated databases that can interlink and that you can query remotely. So there is no intention of building a large database or moving data around. Technological advances have enabled us to query data remotely and preserving patient privacy and anonymity. We can query data remotely in European databases with an intelligent probe, and this probe can ask a question to the database and return with the answer. That is the vision behind the Darwin EU network. So we see it as a supplement to the RCTs, which we think is very meaningful and basically enabling the regulatory system to go one step deeper than what has previously been possible.
Thank you, Nikolai, for that. I think what you sketch here or move towards is a completely new way of working. And one of the other recommendations that actually goes hand in hand with the Darwin EU is the initiative on building the EU regulatory network capability to analyze big data. I think it's obviously important that the network can match the scientific expertise by the industry developers to furnish the best scientific advice, but also, of course, have in-house the capability to analyze big data sets associated with real-world data. So could you share with us what has been done, or maybe what is being done in terms of upskilling the regulatory network capacity in this regard?
We've actually done a lot already. We have hosted a series of workshops in the Big Data Steering Group, where we have invited not just regulators, but also stakeholders such as industry, patients association, healthcare providers, etc. And the aim is indeed, as you say, that we as regulators who have been used to making assessments of the data packages that have been submitted to us by the innovators, we need to take a step up. We need to be able to review the raw data, like our colleagues in the FDA in the US and the PMDA in Japan have been doing for up to 10 years now, reviewing, for instance, CDISC data, which is a type of organization of raw data from the clinical studies or patient-level data. And we need to be able to do that in Europe as well, so that we can maintain the checks and balances and verify the analysis done by the industry when they submit the file. In addition to that, we also need to upskill our very, very clever employees in the regulatory network to know about real-world data sources and what they can be used for. What are their strengths and weaknesses? What are the data standards that we operate with? What are the data quality measures that we seek to achieve? When is data good and when can you trust on it? It all comes back to a question of trust. When can we as regulators use a set of data for the purposes of regulatory decision-making? And how can the general public have trust in our decisions when we make them based upon these data sources? And for this, we need to train our employees. We also need to hire new types of employees, probably more computer scientists and advanced analytics specialists need to be hired into the network and complement the existing capacity that we have to interrogate preclinical and clinical data sources and do benefit risk assessments now with new analytics capabilities, also including artificial intelligence, which we can work to our advantage in interrogating these large data sets and make very sure that we know when the data are contributing to our knowledge or when the data is not sufficiently good that we can use it to base regulatory decisions upon.
Thank you very much for that clarification, sharing of the different initiatives that are already ongoing. You mentioned analytics specialists, and you also mentioned artificial intelligence. And I know that the Danish Medicines Agency recently launched a Danish Data Analytics Center. I think this would cater towards what you just talked about. But could you elaborate a little bit how this ties into the recommendations of the task force and the value add it will give to the network?
When you look at the very comprehensive set of recommendations done by the Big Data Task Force, it immediately becomes clear that not every nation can implement all of these recommendations at the same time throughout Europe. There will be countries that move quicker on certain areas than others. And that's only to be expected and natural. And we could call the countries that launch initiatives in the area of advanced analytics, clusters of excellence, for instance. And we see that the data analytics center that we have established at the Danish Medicines Agency is part of such a cluster of excellence. We're trying nationally to build up capacity to interrogate both patient-level data when submitted in CDISC format by the innovators for regulatory assessment, but also to use the abundance of real-world data available through the very well-established registries of healthcare data that we have in Denmark to complement our assessment of new therapies for the benefit of the patients in Denmark. This can then feed into the European system. So, for instance, if the EMA receives a new application for a new drug to go onto the market from an innovator, just as they appoint a rapporteur and a co-rapporteur for doing the toxicology, the quality, and the clinical assessment, they can appoint a country to lead on the analytics work. And we see it as complementary to what has been done already. This is one of the sites in Europe that are starting to build such analytics capabilities. I see, fortunately, that lots of other countries in Europe are now starting to launch similar initiatives. And we look forward to working very closely together with our colleagues throughout Europe.
You mentioned different countries here, and then I came to think of different regions in the world. So another recommendation is on international collaboration on big data. And I just wonder what kind of entities or initiatives are out there with whom or which one could collaborate internationally. And when you discuss this, could you then also maybe put into context, where does the EU end up in an international benchmark? Is the EU ahead of the curve, on the curve, or behind the curve when it comes to accessing, utilizing, and benefiting from big data?
I think this is a very simple question. I'm not sure there's a simple answer to it, because I think it depends on what type of big data and what type of process that you're talking about. It's very clear that our good colleagues in the US, through the FDA and their Sentinel initiatives, have started to query very large amounts of big data much earlier than we did in Europe. The Sentinel initiative today has data for more than 200 million plus insured patients in the US, which is certainly very impressive. And some of the people that we in the EU would very much like to work together with. However, the US Sentinel initiative is not similar to what we're proposing in Darwin EU. The US Sentinel initiative is centered on inputs from Medicaid, from Medicare, and from the insurance companies. And we know there's a quite substantial lag time before it's posted in Sentinel. So while Sentinel is great for interrogating large amounts of data, it's not very suited towards real-time interrogation. Now, in Denmark, during the corona pandemic, we very quickly saw a need for interrogating some of our national patient registries, including our COVID registries on patients who had tested positive for coronavirus. We could do that in real time. And while Denmark is a small country with only 6 million people and therefore cannot possibly match the data volumes that the US has, we could actually complement that by real-time interrogation of our COVID-positive patients, their medicines use, their risk factors, their outcomes, and we have published that. And therefore, in that sense, we're actually ahead of the curve in the EU, where the US is volume-wise ahead of the EU when it comes to big data. We should also not forget our good colleagues in Japan. They have started electronic access through the MidNet initiative, I think in close to 5 million patients from around Japan, I think it's central southern Japan, where they are able to interrogate real-time data from 5 million secondary care patients in the Japanese hospital systems. So I see this in the future as something that we can collaborate on. Say that we in 6 million Danish citizens detect a signal with an interaction of a drug and a disease outcome. We could take this theory to our good colleagues in Japan and the US and say, what do you see in this regard? This is our hypothesis. Can you run that in your data sets? And how do you see the outcomes in your patients? And we wouldn't be compromising any patient privacy or anonymity. But they could give us an answer and see at an aggregated level what kind of signal do they see in their larger data sets. I think that there's a lot of potential for international collaboration. I just mentioned a few of them, but I think the future looks very bright when it comes to using big data for the benefit of the patients.
On that high note, Nikolai, the future is looking very bright, and we have several systems that complement each other, and that collaboration between regulatory jurisdictions will be the way forward. Maybe we should close today. And I wanted to thank you then for sharing your insights with us here today. And I also want to wish you and your colleagues the best of luck in moving forward with all these different recommendations and getting them implemented for the benefit of the sector and all the stakeholders, and most notably also for society and patients. So thank you again, Nikolai, for this.
Thank you very much, Thomas. It was a pleasure joining you today.
So we finish there for DIA. I am Thomas Kuhler. Thank you for listening.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.